there. Tell him to get in the saddle. Senate will come to order. The reading clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard. The
clerk will please call the roll.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Esquivel. Geis,
here.
Hastert,
here.
Hicks,
here.
Hines,
here.
Jennings,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Martin,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas, Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson, Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer, Scott,
here.
Von Platern, President Anderson,
here.
Barnard,
excused.
Nicholas,
excused.
Peterson,
excused.
Von Platern,
excused.
Twenty-six present, four excused.
Prayer by Rabbi Harley.
And I've gone from Rabbi Karswagman to Rabbi Harley. Brought a cup of coffee and notes, but don't worry, it's still going to be a short invocation. From all of those sources that we derive both insight and inspiration, we recall that yesterday we heard so many words during the day, so many messages of caring, of hope, and of equality for all, words that reflect the core values of almost all of our faith traditions. And I can't help but think that, like any prophet, that Dr. King, were he here, would probably have chastised us for ignoring so many realities in our country. We have millions of children going that wake up each morning to face a day of hunger and malnutrition. And they see little hope because they don't hear many political leaders who even mention their problem. We have tens of millions of children and women who wake each morning wondering what kind of abuse and what kind of a violence will they suffer that day. And again, they have little hope because they rarely hear their cause mentioned, even though all of us care deeply about them. And we have tens of millions who lack adequate health care and tens of millions who have grossly inadequate education. And at least on those subjects, we do hear some talk about them. But so often actions that have happened in our country lead us to more inequality and less of the equality we kept speaking about yesterday. However, for all of that, we said words of hope, we meant those words of hope, and we all pray that through those words we will be inspired to action that will bring that dream of equality closer to reality. And for that hope, we can all say, Amen. Thank you.
Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January the 17th, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. We have no doctor for the day. We have no nurse for the day, so let's all be very careful. On this day in Wyoming history, in 1924, a wave of bank failures continued with the closure of a Douglas bank. Introduction, reading, and references of bills. Senate File 111, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 111, Game Animals Damage, an act relating to game and fish, sponsored by Senator Geis.
Senate File 111 has been assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 113, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 113, Surveyors and Engineers Practice Act Revisions, an act relating to professional surveyors and engineers, sponsored by Senator Johnson.
Senate File 113 has been assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 112, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 112, National Guard Billeted Soldiers Fund, an act relating to the military, sponsored by the Transportation Committee.
Senate File 112 has been assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 105, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 105, State Control of Certain Land, an act relating to public land, sponsored by Senator Jennings.
Senate File 105 has been assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Reports from standing committees.
January the 17th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 43, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. January the 17th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 51, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, and Schiffer, noes, Senator Nutting, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. January the 17th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 73, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, Jennings, and Rothfuss, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. Senate File 5, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 5, State Land Improvement, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee.
Senate File 5, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 6, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 6, Animal Damage Management Board Report, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee.
There are no amendments. Senate File 6, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 7, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 7, State Fair, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee.
There is an amendment, and I would ask that the reading clerk read in the Emmerich Amendment at this time.
Senate File 7, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope the members will bear with me and hope that my voice will last. I move the amendment to Senate File 7 in the hopes that I might answer the questions from the good senator from Sheridan as to what this bill is all about. It's relating to the State Fair, elimination of obsolete language, identifying the responsibilities of the Director of Agriculture in his ability to hire management to run the fair, run other incidents at the fair, and for the management of the fair grounds. It also changes some verbiage to allow for return of the property to the donors, of which there are very many, upon cessation of the state fair for 3 years. In going through the amendment, we have added back the stricken terms several places. When we refer to the director, Director of Department of Agriculture is mentioned several times through here, and we wish to clarify it, even though it is in the statutes in another section. I think that the amendment is relatively self-explanatory. I would stand to answer questions if you have any, gentlemen and lady.
Giving you just a moment to look at this amendment, I would ask if there are any questions or further discussion or questions of the author. Seeing none, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
I believe that amendment has passed. Back on the bill. Senate File 7, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 15, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 15, Court Jurisdiction, sponsored by the Joint Judiciary Committee.
There are no amendments. Senate File 15 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 20, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 20, Election Code Revision, sponsored by the Corporations Committee.
I believe there is an amendment, that being the Peterson Amendment, the first amendment to Senate File 20. Would the reading clerk please read that amendment at this time?
Senate File 20, Second Reading Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 8.
Senator Peterson, would you like to address move and address that amendment?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 20. Mr. President, fellow senators, this is a simple little change. I had concerns about giving this authority to a single person, such as our county clerks. I trust boards and commissions more than I trust one person, and so I would simply explain this. Page 1, line 8 is changing the definition or the striking out the providing for appointment or canvassing board members by county clerk. Page 2. Line 5, striking the section 2216-101. And then finally, Mr. President and Senators, we go to page 10, striking the lines 5 through 11, leaving the language the same, which would be the Board of County Commissioners, this canvassing board being appointed by the Board of County Commissioners rather than one county clerk. And I just... The heartburn that it caused me was in some of our counties, we have natural splits and divisions of north and south or east and west. And depending on where that clerk is from, appointing two friends, one from each party, perhaps from the south end of the county or the north end of the county or east or west. My feeling is if it's not broke, don't fix it. And in this case, I don't think this was broken, and so why mess with it? I think it's a step backwards in the wrong direction of giving that authority to one individual. So I stand for questions.
Further discussion or any questions? Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, as I said yesterday, this bill was brought forth at the request of the county clerks, with the county commissioner's representative sitting there in committee. And we didn't hear a word about that from the commissioners or their representative. What this shows is reality. The county clerk finds two people for the canvassing board, one from each party, and then right now has to run around find the commissioners to approve it. If there is time, there is a time restraint. So, fellow senators, I would say let's trust our county clerks. I know I trust mine, and please vote no on this amendment.
Further questions or comments in regard to this amendment? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I did bring this issue up in the committee both during the interim and when we came here. I guess in my heart I tend to agree with the sponsor of the amendment. It seems to me that the original intent was that you had this situation where the clerk is the election officer for the county and that in validating the results of the election that should involve people not necessarily appointed directly by her because she is the election officer, she or he. However, there was considerable discussion that in practice, this is not a very easy thing to do, and since the actual canvassing board members are made up of political party folks, that in itself is a check. Me, I think I'm going to go with the sponsor of the amendment, but do you understand there are kind of a little bit on both sides? And I would say our clerks are right 999% of the time, and I don't want to be on their bad side when I go against them.
Senator Perkins. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, as a former county commissioner, I can tell you any good county commissioner understands the politics of these regions is deathly afraid of their county clerk. They represent the budget officer for the county and wield a significant amount of power. But in this case, it just strikes me that one of the things you're talking about when you look at internal control, any kind of business, anything like that, is to create a division of labor. So that they're kind of multiple checks and balances, and it would just seem to me that this would both be a protection to the county clerk and just as appropriate division of labor to make sure that when you come through elections, which are as important if not more important than money matters, that you have kind of that division of labor so that it just puts everything completely above board and above and beyond question. And so for that reason, I'm going to stand speaking obviously on and in favor of the amendment.
Mr. President, speaking on and against the amendment, please. Testimony we had in the interim committee was really quite persuasive that the current division of labor was not effective, that the county commissioners were not taking any interest in it, and it was causing difficulties actually getting the canvas boards appointed. And I think what's happened is, as this state has developed as we have, our traditions of clean elections, and as the degree of professionalism amongst the county clerks has increased, the county commissioners have increasingly viewed this as not something they really need to be involved with. And the consequence is they're having trouble getting the county clerk. The county clerks are having trouble getting the commissioners to get the canvassing boards approved and done in time, and they're having to do it themselves anyhow. So this change makes the statute conform better to what the practice is. So I think the need for the division of labor here has passed.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I have to agree with the good senator from Natrona County. The senior, taller one. Thank you. Sorry, Mr. President. I'll get back on task here. I'm having a hard time. Of the 8 years that I spent as a county commissioner, I don't ever remember being appraised by the county clerk of who was going to be on this board or who was going to be appointed. It's just general practice that, and if you will check with your local commissioners or clerks, you will find out that that is the way it's usually done anyway. And all we're doing is codifying kind of what is being done in the counties already in most instances. But we may want to leave that control in there, but I'd say we really probably don't need it because that's not what's being really done in the counties. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further comment before the sponsor takes his second time. Being done, second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 20. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Here is in doubt. I think that we'll have all those in favor, please stand.
We were ribald.
All those opposed, please stand.
Oh, yeah.
That amendment has failed. We're now back on the bill, and there is a second amendment, and that amendment is the case amendment, and I would ask that the reading clerk read in the case amendment.
Senate File 20, Second Reading Amendment Number 2, delete the Senate Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Chase.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move Second Reading Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 20. And Mr. President, this deals with the issue that got me so red-faced yesterday on the good senator from Campbell County's questions about what the heck this actually said. And so I took his criticisms to heart, and it really deals with the issues on page 5, which is 225304, and it all has to do with the situation where when an independent candidate in a partisan election is attempting to get on the ballot. And the whole question is, how many nominating signatures does he or she have to obtain to make sure that their name is placed on the general election ballot? And it used to be pretty simple because we either had countywide offices that were partisan, or we had statewide offices that were partisan. All your municipal offices are nonpartisan, so they didn't come into play. So there was no independent candidates that moved forward to the general election. So then we, of course, developed legislative districts that hadn't really been dealt with in the law. And now, of course, we have county commission districts, which also need to be dealt with. So how does an independent candidate get on the general election ballot in those situations? I think the language we had covered it, but it was very poorly drafted in the new versus the old. Three choices. The first one, lines 15 through 22, is a statewide partisan office, and it says you have to get 2% of the congressional vote. 24 through 28 is the countywide partisan office, and that says you have to get 2% of the congressional votes for that county. 30 through 39 is 2% of whatever district we're talking, or is the district partisan office we're talking about. It could be legislative district. It could be commissioner district. And it says you have to get 2% from that area. You have to get signatures totaling 2% of the number of votes cast for that office in the last general election. I think that clears it up, and it doesn't change anything. There's nothing under the table here. It's trying to reword what we actually had in the bill.
Comments or questions of the sponsor, Senator Von Platern?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd just like to thank the good senator from Lander because it really is easy to read.
Thank you. Other comment? Other question? Any further comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 20, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. No further amendments. Senate File 20. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bill's on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. We do have a consent list, and the consent list for today for third reading is as follows. Senate File 4, Elections, Military and Overseas Voters. Senate File 18, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Compliance, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act Compliance. Senate File 21, Property Tax Exemption for Nonprofit Museum. Senate File 28, State Parks Volunteers. Senate File 32, State Parks Trails. And Senate File 42, Choice License Plates for Disabled Veterans.
Would anyone like any of the bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 4, Senate File 18, Senate File 21, Senate File 28, Senate File 32, Senate File 42. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns. Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich. Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas. Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 4, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 4, 30 ayes. Senate File 18, are there any changes? Case, I to no.
Ross, I to no.
Ross, I to no. Dockstader, I to no. Hicks, I to no. Nicholas, I to no. Perkins, I to no. Meyer, I to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 18, 23 ayes, 7 noes. Senate File 21, are there any changes? Case, I to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 21, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 28, are there any changes? Case, I to no. Co, I to no.
Anderson, I to no.
President Anderson, I to no. Perkins, I to no. Bebout, I to no. Peterson, I to no. Cooper, I to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 28, 23 ayes, 7 noes. Senate File 32, are there any changes? Case, I to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 32, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 42, are there any changes? Perkins, I to no. Close. Case, I to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 42, 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 4, Senate File 18, Senate File 21, Senate File 28, Senate File 32, and Senate File 42 have passed the Senate. Other bills on third reading. Senate File 23, third reading of the Senate file. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 23, Mail Ballot Elections, an act relating to elections, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. May it be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment attached, third reading amendment to Senate File 23. That is the Jennings Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read that amendment?
Senate File 23, third reading amendment number 1, page 5 after line 22.
Senator Jennings, would you like to move that amendment and present it?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 on Senate File 23. As we talked about this amendment yesterday, and with the passage of the First Amendment on this bill, we had to add the Secretary of State if the election was in more than one county. I addressed the problem with the post office box, made that a physical address. And basically, I also had some conversations with my county clerk on this, and I stand corrected by my county clerk that when we talked about taking the voting files or the registered voter files and compare them against the addresses that was put together by the Planning Commission, we had discussed that, and she did it. And she was telling me about it this morning after the nice email I got from her. And it was so easy that they didn't even think it was any reason to go back and say anything about it. They just basically took the two databases, put them together, and they pulled the addresses that were not addresses where you could live. She said most of it was in the absentee ballot range where somebody was putting a business instead of a residence. But there were some vacant lots in there that they had to call people and straighten it out. So that was the first one. Now, what we have to remember on this bill with this amendment is this is a once in a very, very seldom time that we're going to do this special election. And that's why this amendment's up here, is because we had one that showed some expense. This is the only time right now that the county clerk takes their whole database and sends it out. Every time, all the other times, it's somebody contacting them on an absentee ballot, and they send it out to whatever address they give them. So this is, with this amendment, this is a way that without a lot of expense and without a lot of trouble, you can clean up that address and take out those bad areas. It's as simple as, bless you, it's as simple as taking the list that you sent out and compare it to the list that came back, and you can paint one color and another one and merge them together in an Excel file and sort them, and there they are. It's not a lot of time. It's not a lot of expense, but it is a way to help the county clerks clean up that list. I ask you to vote yes on the amendment.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments to be made? The question is? I'm sorry. Senator Hines?
Mr. President, on the explanation and reading it, I think it should be clear that this is just removing the address. It's not removing the registration. Because the registration, if you vote at a general election, the state law and other areas say you are registered to vote for the next 2 years. So all this is doing is removing that address, which will not affect anyone's registration.
Thank you for the clarification, Senator Hines. Other questions, or if not, the question then is, shall third reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 23, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Seeing no other amendments, are you ready for the question? Senate File 23 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall a bill pass? The Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel? Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Platern, President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Senate File 23, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 23 has passed the Senate. The next bill, third reading bill for our consideration is Senate File 26. The reading clerk will please read that bill.
Senate File 26, County Roads, Speed Limits and Local Authority to Alter. An act relating to speed limits, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment, first reading amendment, or the third reading amendment number one to Senate File 26. Senator Meyer, that's your amendment. Would you like to move it at this time?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you have the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Senate File 26, third reading amendment number one, page one, line 11.
Go ahead, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think there's confusion in the language in this and what it will actually do, and then notwithstanding subsection B, and so I think I'd like to withdraw this amendment at this point in time. And discuss it with some of the House members over there to find out whether or not we can do what I'm trying to do, which is basically establish a grandfather clause and some more flexibility. So at this point in time, I would withdraw the amendment.
Seeing no objection, that amendment has been withdrawn, so be ordered. Senate File 26, are you ready for the question? Senate File 26, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines? Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer? Scott?
No.
Bonflatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing?
Hicks, aye to no.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
Senate File 26, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 26 has passed the Senate. Consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for considerations of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion has carried. Senator Dockstader, you have the privilege today. Would you please come up? Chairs.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. First bill for our consideration is Senate File 36. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Give me the bill.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Senator.
Senate File 36, Seclusion and Restraint in Schools. an act relating to public schools, sponsored by Senator Case.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Oh, there is an amendment.
It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Cole, Jennings, Landon, Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman.
Senator Cole.
I'd like to have that read in at this time.
Would you read the amendment, please?
Senate File 36, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 6.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that amendment and defer to the sponsor of the bill, Senator Case, for an explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 36, Seclusion Restraint in Schools, would require that schools in Wyoming develop guidelines for the use of seclusion and restraint. Mr. Chairman, seclusion is basically when you take a student and you put him in some type of secluded environment. It may be with other people or it may be by themselves. It may be locked. It may not be locked. And, Mr. Chairman, restraint is when a student is restrained, forcibly held in some way, perhaps with hands-on or possibly with respect to devices like, you know, handcuffs or something like that, I suppose. Mr. Chairman, I'm the first one to tell you that schools have a really, really tough job, and it's a tougher job than they've ever had in their lives. And people that work in schools certainly are dealing with students that they probably have never dreamed that would have been dealt with, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And some of the students in our schools are extremely fragile people. Some of them have behavior problems. Some of them have developmental disabilities. Some of them have other handicaps. It's a great challenge. But what we do find is that when people don't really understand how to effectively work with all sorts of students in the area of seclusion and restraint, we get some bad things happening. And it certainly have had some bad things happen in Wyoming and even worse things happen across the nation. For example, sometimes people with different types of disabilities have breathing difficulties. And if they're restrained, it's very easy to interrupt their ability to breathe in a manner that you wouldn't even think of would apply to a normal person, a person without a handicap. To some people, being locked up is a very terrifying thing. And really what I guess it comes down to is our Constitution applies to everybody. You know, it says you don't lock people up and you don't torture them. So we need to be careful how we discipline and handle people that are our citizens that happen to be in our government-owned schools. And the Constitution applies just as strong. What this bill says is, hey, we have to stop and think about this a little bit, and every district ought to develop some guidelines with respect to the use of seclusion and restraint. And you know, I'm not usually the kind of guy that brings things like this, but we are dealing with some of the most fragile people in our society, and we are dealing with an area that I've been persuaded that there is need. And in order to make this happen, what the bill proposes is it goes into the duties of the Superintendent of Public Instructions and says, that's the part under 21.2.202, and it says that the superintendent will, by rule and regulation, adopt no later than July 1st of 2011 requirements for school district policies regarding the use of seclusion and restraint. So the superintendent establishes these policies, and then by the end of the year, districts throughout Wyoming would establish guidelines. And the superintendent will approve those guidelines and help districts to get their guidelines up to snuff. The thinking here is each district won't have to reinvent the wheel. They can just adopt the uniform guidelines. And you can see some of the things about the proposed law is it does put a little bit of framework on things on what the policy should establish. For example, one thing that on page 3, lines 3 through 5, you'll notice that the policy that the district adopts shall require that a parent or legal guardian of the student shall be notified each time that seclusion or restraint is utilized for that student. That's a very important aspect because sometimes in our modern world, the people that we have in our schools cannot necessarily talk. Some are very fragile people, and they can't go home and say, guess what, I got in trouble today, and they locked me in a room. Or guess what, Mr. So-and-so came and grabbed me and held me. And they can't say that. So this says that the school actually has an obligation to inform the parent. And like it or not, it came about because of a real case in Fremont County, a real situation. But it does try to explain, for example, what restraint is. And we have a definition here. Restraint means the use of a physical force with or without the use of any physical device or material to restrict the free movement of all or a portion of a student's body. Restraint does not include comforting or calming a student, holding the hand or arm of a student to escort the student if the student is complying, intervening in a fight, or using a device prescribed by an appropriate professional. That sentence goes on, but is a subject of the amendment. So that is what it's not. Now, Mr. Chairman, if I could propose the amendment, I'll track it in and I'll be open for questions about everything. One of the concerns, there's a kind of a task force of folks that include people from the Governor's Planning Office on Developmental Disabilities, people from the State Superintendent's Office, and interested parents that have been cooperating to work on this language. And at the good chairman of the Education Committee's suggestion, we got together for a little bit of refinement and proposed an amendment which was adopted by the committee and is the subject of the Standing Committee Amendment. And that amendment, just to track it in, if you look on page 2, line 6, after the word policies, it adds the words and training. So that says that the rules that the superintendent of public instruction shall adopt will establish requirements for school district policies and for training regarding the use of seclusion and restraint. And really, if you think about it, that's kind of an important aspect. This is not to pick on people that are, you know, very important souls in our schools that are helping to take care of these folks, helping to teach these folks. You know, God bless them. But this is saying, let's have kind of some uniform training of what's the right technique and what's not. I was shocked to find out that schools are all over the map on this. Okay, to continue with the amendment, very similar amendment under the guidelines to be adopted by the schools. That's page 2, line 24. Again, after the word policy, it's a similar amendment, slightly worded differently, but we add the words and training procedures. Then you will look on page 3, line 6. This is something that was important to folks from the developmentally disabled community. The community of people with developmental disabilities, to add on line 6 of page 3 after the period, the policy shall prohibit the use of locked seclusion. It's kind of an affirmative statement by the legislature. You're never going to let them lock a kid up in a room. Continuing on, page 3, lines 22, there's a bit of debate, I suppose, and I didn't see this when this bill was first drafted, but a lot of students in our schools are covered by what's called an individual education plan, or IEP for short. And I assumed that whatever was in the IEP, whatever was in that plan, would be okay for use. If that IEP specified that if Johnny is acting out, you may restrain him in this manner, that makes it automatically okay. Turns out that's not necessarily so, because not always are IEPs developed by people that are trained in this area. So they wanted, the suggestion was made, and I went for it, and so did the committee, to delete "and consistent with the student's individualized education program," and to try to encompass that by putting in the training again, so that sentence says, restraint does not include comforting or calming a student, holding the hand or arm of a student to escort the student if the student is complying, intervening in a fight, or using a device prescribed by an appropriately trained professional or professional team. The appropriate training is important there. That would now modify the, this team. It may be an IEP team, but it kind of raises standards, so they need to be appropriately trained. That would be the entirety, I think, of the amendment. There's one more. I'm sorry. Page 4, we had described seclusion, the definition of seclusion in the bill is described as seclusion means removing a student from a classroom or other school activity and isolating the student in a separate supervised area. Well, it may not be a supervised area. In fact, it's worse if it's not a supervised area. So we want to just, it may or may not be supervised. So the idea is that under the amendment is to take out the word supervised. So seclusion means removing a student from a classroom or other school activity and isolating the student in a separate area. That allows for both supervised and unsupervised, if you follow me. That's the entirety of the bill and the amendment. I'm available for questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Questions? Senator Schiffer?
Question, and I'm going specifically to the amendment. Two parts of the amendment. The first part, over on page 2, requires a training procedure. And then later on in the bill, over on page 3, on lines 22. Thank you, sir. I have tech support. On page 3, lines 22, it says an appropriately trained professional. The appropriately trained professional, is that someone who's been through the school district's training program that we're going to insert with this amendment, or is that a trained professional with some higher degree in education? Will that suffice? The training on page 2 suffice for the trained professional on page 3.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I can entirely answer that. A lot of that will have to be with the rulemaking. And let me just give you a little bit more background about, there are a lot of things that aren't real specific in this bill, because all the school districts and the state superintendent are going to have to write the rules for this thing. And it's not all clear how this is going to proceed. But I would imagine that those rules would specify what the appropriate training is, and what professionals, what type of training those professionals would have had to have to be appropriately trained according to the law. The rules would specify that. What does that actually mean? Well, I hope it's not real extensive, but the people that would be knowledgeable about seclusion and restraint, and anybody working in this area, I think, should be. But I hate to give you more specificity, because it will be up to the rules. And the rules in this whole thing are going to be important. There were lots of people that wanted more specificity in the law. And like, for example, does restraint mean when you give somebody a physical assist? That's a word that somebody told me, when you actually help them. And then there was argument about what that actually means. In some school districts, physical assist means you're walking them out of an area. You can be dragging them out. So it was unclear. But, let's not put it in the law. Let's take a look at the rules that come out. I think all the folks that are involved in this, usually you say, I don't want to give them leeway with respect to rules. But what this is going to involve is a process where the superintendent will gather the parties together from school districts who have to provide these services, perhaps people in the community of folks with developmental disabilities that can talk about special needs in that area, et cetera, and get them together and agree on rules with respect to seclusion and restraint. I don't know of any other way to do it. And that's a long way to get at to your good question, but that's the best I can do.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions for the sponsor of the bill. The first is that in your explanation of the bill, you've used the terms guidelines and policies interchangeably. And a guideline to me is far different than a policy. The bill speaks of a policy. But I'd like some further clarification on that. But the second question goes to, if we do develop this policy, does it open the school district for litigation because we've now adopted this policy rather than leaving it in its current state?
Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, the proposed law refers to policies. And any reference I made to guidelines, I suspect I should have used the word policies, good Senator. And I want to be precise. These are going to be written policies that school districts will adopt, and they're going to be submitted to the state superintendent. She's going to either say these pass muster with the rules or they don't, and they'd have to be redone. So they are policies. Now, will it open a school district to litigation? I'm actually hopeful that it'll protect school districts, because if they follow their policies, you know, that should give some comfort. Right now, most school districts do not have any policies. A few do. The state of Wyoming actually has rules and policies for our facilities, like the Life Resource Center, like the Girls' School and the Boys' School. We have written policies with respect to seclusion and restraint. I suspect we did that for a reason, and that actually having it be clear is going to be a better outcome for everyone, and it should be a better outcome with regard to potential litigation. And just having everybody know what they can and cannot do and be appropriately trained, that's got to be a good thing. And I would think that that would, in and of itself, save us from litigation. You know, I'm sure you can make the argument on the other side that you can hide behind the vagueness that's out there with respect to saying, is this a violation or not? But in the end, is that really better for the people that are the young people, the students in our system, or perhaps going to save somebody's life or what have you? So it seems to me that this would be a better approach to prevent litigation. I leave it for anyone else to argue differently.
Senator Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to commend a good senator from Fremont County for bringing this legislation to the body. My question, and it might be addressed in rules, but my question pertains to page 3, line 4. I was just wondering if there would be some explanation in regard to when the parent or legal guardian would be notified. Would that be immediately after, or what manner of notification? I just wonder if that might be necessary. It was just those types of questions, and those might be answered in the rules. I'm not sure. But thank you.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're all over the board here on the amendment and the bill, so I'm just going to throw this out.
Senator, we'll clarify that at the end of the vote. Yeah. Thank you.
I'd just like to ask the good bringer of the bill, or the sponsor managing this bill, just throw out a scenario and ask the question. If you had a situation where you had two students that, say, got in a fight or a brawl in school, and the administration had to separate them because of this fight. And not only that, they had to actually physically have them put in different classes or a different area of the school in order to prevent this from continuing or happening. Could the parents under this bill come back to the school district and say, look, you're secluding my child from being able to participate in other things within school, because now you've removed him from the ability to do other things in the school. Is that possible under this bill, or did you think about that or talk about that?
Yes, Senator Case.
If a time frame is not specified, it was generally talked about 24 hours might be a good goal, good target. I suppose that may depend on the seriousness of the situation, and more immediate notification might happen. I can only speak in broadly. I'm actually the guardian of a resident of the Life Resource Center, and I am notified about changes in his health condition, by the close of business on the same day that they find it, if they can. And they have my cell phone number, and they actually call me. But it's not in relation to seclusion restraint, but it's very common for parents to be notified. I think 24 hours in most cases might sound like it'd be reasonable. But, again, that's provided for in rules. To the good senator from all those counties over there, including the fine Lincoln County, there is a specific exception in the law for intervening in a fight. We can create any scenario where the intervention leads to further actions that happen. And I'm sure that you could. It's kind of a test of reasonableness here that's got to be made. If I intervene in a fight and then I still have them locked up after the need for locking them up or physically restraining them or whatever I have to do, if that becomes way far afield to what was actually necessary to keep them from combating, that might get to where it could be. I mean, the coin could change. But I want to point out, law enforcement and the proposed federal law enforcement have the ability to arrest students. And that's not... not against the law to arrest a student. I also point out there is language in the bill that permits, when you look at what seclusion is not, it says seclusion does not include a student-requested break or in-school suspension, detention, or other appropriate disciplinary measure. So if I could just go with your question a little bit longer, that if there was an altercation and then as a result, students were put in detention or something like that, clearly that's permitted under the law. That we need these rules so badly because the law is not going to fix every possibility, but that's my best take. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Nutting.
Statement that the rules must include a plan for provision of basic human needs, such as water and toileting.
Any further discussion? Senator Case?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's another one of those areas where you have to decide whether you want to put that in the law or let the rules take care of that. And what I'd like to do is let's talk to some folks about that possibility. There are people here actually working this bill, and maybe we get their input on that point I'll get a better answer for you. And I'll have them talk to you. We still have the amendment on the table, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if we're ready for that question.
Senator Case. Okay, thank you. If you'll permit me a bit of housekeeping clarification here, we do have that amendment to take care of, so we'll proceed with that first. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 36, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Back on the bill. Any further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 36, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 36 is passed the Committee of the Whole.
Next Senate file for our consideration, Senate file 71. Would reading clerk please read the bill, and there is an amendment.
Senate file 71, Education, Hunter Safety Courses, and Act Relating to Education, sponsored by Senator Christensen. It was referred to Committee Number 4. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Cole, Jennings, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with the do pass recommendation on Senate File 71. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
Reading clerk, read the amendment.
Senate File 71, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 15.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that amendment and defer to the sponsor of the bill for an explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment and the bill, Senator Christensen.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman. Wyoming has a history that is woven together. Wyoming has a history that is woven together with firearms. It's part of our legacy. It's here. It continues to be a big part of what's going on in this state, whether it's through hunting, whether it's through sports, you name it, it's out there. Historically, people learned about hunter safety in the field or in the backyard. It was from a parent. It was from a sibling. And there was space. In spite of that, there were still accidents out there. Those do happen. But today, when we look at people's schedules, their lives, it seems like a fair amount of the information that children learn about firearms comes from the movies, it comes from television, it comes from video games. And that role that traditionally parents played a large part in or family members has been strained and stressed. We have a statute that requires that you have a hunter safety card before you can get your hunting license, and that statute is 23-2-106. This bill that you have in front of you today, it provides for the schools to offer to the 5th and the 6th grade children the hunter safety education. It prohibits the schools from charging for that. That doesn't create a problem, as we've discovered. And it's pretty wide open. The how and the when of how that service is discretionary, meaning it could be offered as an elective during the day, it could be offered in the morning, it could be offered in the afternoon, much like other electives that kids have the opportunity to take care of. The importance of this is it gives those children a chance to learn hunter safety, to learn firearm safety in a controlled and a safe environment. It also takes some of the burden off the parents to try to get those kids there at night or after school or on weekends when it is offered now. The Game and Fish is mandated to support and offer that training in our state, and this bill makes for a great relationship. I spoke with the director of the Game and Fish. He was very excited about that opportunity. Currently, the Game and Fish trains volunteers to teach the course, and at times, Game and Fish officers teach the course. As far as when I talk about the bill being wide open for the schools to work with, there's three different ways that course information could be taught in the schools, either through a Game and Fish officer, through a volunteer that's trained by Game and Fish and approved by the schools, or with school people themselves. Game and Fish, again, offers to train all of those people to include the school staff. They also supply the material. So when we talk about the cost, the fiscal notes that really said there were no impact, as we got into it, there is no impact out there. There is no impact on the school budgets as far as providing that or providing material. The course content, which is important, when I go back to that, you know, where kids are learning about firearms in this day, the course content talks about responsibility and ethics, wildlife conservation and management, firearms and firearm safety, game and fish statutes and regulations, game care, wildlife identification, and outdoor safety. the key, and I think what's important about that balance in how the course is managed and taught, is it really takes away, or it adds to that big picture about firearms and their purpose and their responsible use and the bigger picture. It helps get us away from that that idea of either we love them or we hate them, we fear them or are fascinated with them. And by exposing them not just to the firearms and the skills themselves, but the bigger picture and how it works. In speaking with the state school folks, we had support in the committee from the state school, from the state game and fish, and they believe that this can work together and accomplish a lot of good for the kids. Again, it's important to remember this is an elective. It's meant to be an elective. It's not forced on the children, but the schools are required to offer it. It's fairly wide open, again, as how it's implemented to reduce the stress and the pressures on the schools. And that idea was that some schools, it may fit better in their curriculum. Others, it may fit better as outside the school day or next to the school day. But this just requires that the schools get together with the game and fish, offer the courses. As for the amendment, I'd consider the amendment friendly and would ask that the chair go ahead and we vote on the amendment to remove that. And I think the intent of that is the amendment, the original language talks about elementary school, recognizing how different districts are set up. That probably locks it in a little bit too much where it's fifth or sixth grade. This also doesn't preclude the schools from offering or inviting, depending on how it's offered, older kids that have gone beyond that point to be able to have access to it. But the purpose of the fifth or sixth grade is it is right at that level when kids are faced with that challenge to have their hunter safety card before they can get that license. And so it'll help get them through that gateway or make it easier.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. On the amendment now, all those in favor of... Senator Scott, I guess, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question on the amendment. Has it not been read in yet? Then we'd better.
Yes,
it has been. Okay. As I read the amendment, it removes the elementary school language, but you've still got the fifth or grade five or grade six language on page 2. Line 1 in the bill, is that correct?
Senator Christensen.
That is correct. And that is, again, some schools may have their sixth grade in a middle school setting. And it's just to clarify that the fifth grade setting they can't charge, but the sixth they could. It just wipes that out.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would urge us to think between now and second reading about loosening this requirement up a little further. I know when my children went through our school district, hunter safety was a course that was offered. I believe they took it, but it was offered at the junior high level. And that strikes me as also an appropriate, I forget if it was grade 7 or grade 8, but an appropriate place to order it, offer it, and you might even consider it offering it later, especially if you were getting a lot of new kids in from out of state that hadn't been exposed to it. So I think we might be better served letting the school districts figure out in their circumstances where is the best place to offer it.
Senator Christensen, or Senate President Anderson.
Thank you. Just briefly, I too would concur with the tall senator from Natrona County. Having been in the past a hunter safety instructor, you know, I had the opportunity to instruct this at the junior high, middle school level, and that's certainly a level that I would not overlook. There seems to be a kind of an emerging, developing curiosity of children at that age, and I think that's an age that's really an opportunity to offer these things. This is an age where kids are looking for things to get involved in. This has been offered, and I agree, as a very positive thing for them to be involved in. I, too, would hope that you might make some insertions in this down the road so that we can include junior high and middle school. I do support the bill.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question, and the question I have is, of course, I recognize that there are various school districts that may have your sixth grade in a middle school. And then in that situation, perhaps an elective is appropriate. But I know, like, for instance, in Laramie County School District number 1, we have K through 6. We're going to go to middle schools. We'll be 7 and 8. And then we'll have high school 9 through 12. My question goes to the term elective courses. To my knowledge, in K through 6, there are no elective courses. And while I'm not opposed to the bill, I'm wondering if it shouldn't say extracurricular as an extracurricular activity, particularly because I don't know that we may be precluding some students in K through 6 from actually receiving this because there is no such thing as an elective course in K through 6, at least in our school district. And so it should probably be an either or, it seems to me, but I'd like some, perhaps there's been testimony on that.
Senator Christensen.
The good Speaker of the House, Senator, the good Senator in leadership. Well, anyway. Mr. Chairman, to address that, if you look at the end of the language on that line 4 on page 2, where it says such courses may be offered as an elective, again, that flexibility. The intent was to have that flexibility built in for the school districts, for the ones that could look at it as an elective or another term, and what would fit their district the best. Again, part of the idea of this was to really leave it open so that the local school districts can sit down to their game and fish and see what works out best for them and be able to reach out to those kids. The other thing that's important to remember is that the game and fish said they were not going to discontinue their courses that they were offering in the evenings, weekends. This wasn't going to be the only way to have access to this. And that would address, of course, move-ins at the school age or adults or people who have missed this guideline. And it could come that there are kids that it just isn't appropriate or fits their schedule. This isn't meant to capture everyone, but just to widen the gate.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address the issue in deference to our distinguished Senate President with the issue of talking about the age structure and the appropriateness. And one of the reasons that this particular bill was targeted at those particular age groups, that 10 to 13-year-old age group, is because that's when they start to become eligible to be able to carry high-powered rifles in the field to hunt. And given the fact that Wyoming has one of the highest percentages of populations in the nation that has families that hunt, and the fact that even if they don't hunt, there's a lot of families that retain firearms in their households, and even if you live in a household that doesn't have firearms, there's a high probability that these children are going to be exposed to firearms at some point or another. So rather than move this safety instruction into a older age class of students, the idea was, as our distinguished Senate President indicated, these kids are very curious at this point in time. Well, the intent is to provide firearm safety instruction and the handling and the use of firearms early in their age, so as they progress on, that they have this opportunity to learn an appropriate mechanism and fashions of dealing with firearms, rather than wait until they're 14 or 15 when these firearms already exist in the household. So what we're trying to do is strategically target an age group so we can get that information to them at an early age so they make better decisions in the appropriate handling and dealing with firearms in the household or in the field if they're hunting, versus defer that later on. So it's to target that group for their own protection. And that's the reason for that strategic age class, that 10 to 14-year-old age class. Rather than shift this into a later age class, these kids are already going to have access to these firearms.
Senator Schiffer. We are actually on the amendment, but the bill is being worked into that, too. So on the amendment, is your discussion on the amendment?
We go to the bill.
All right. this point, perhaps if there's no further discussion on the amendment, we have a vote on the amendment. Okay. Question being called, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt standing committee amendment to Senate File 71, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Back on the bill. Further discussion, please. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification, and I think I read this correctly, but my understanding would be that these courses would not be open to the general public that wants to take the firearms course. In other words, they would be open exclusively to students, particularly if they're held in a school during the school day. Anybody that wanted to take a firearms course would not be permitted to come into that school and say, I'm here for the firearms course, and I want to sit down with all your fifth and sixth graders. I want the sponsors to tell me that the school doesn't have to open its doors to the general population that wants to take the firearms course during the school day. And if so, I think it needs to be in here. You're opening a door and allowing into your school people you have no idea who they are or what their interests are, whether it's guns or something else.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, again, clarification on that is the intent and the way it is spelled out is the schools certainly retain control over what happens in those schools. And as the Fish and Game had stated, they will continue to offer other classes that will be, you know, available to the general public. But this is very much targeted just at the schools and those students. If we need to, I'd be glad to visit with good senator with that suggestion to see if we need to tune that language a little bit. And also, in the meantime, I could visit with the schools and see if they have any concerns about this language opening that gate.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to understand the way this would actually work. Under 23-2-106, we have already tasked the Game and Fish Department to institute a hunter safety course, which they do. And they can or they may or may not charge a fee to do that. That's to the general public. Now, this bill comes along and says that school districts shall provide instruction and safety and competency in handling firearms. Is that a different course than the Game and Fish Hunter Safety course? And is this allowing Game and Fish the Game and Fish to come in and offer the instruction, or does this mean that they're going to have to either get teachers to get certified to instruct this, and do they charge the students or the students' parents for this, or is it part of, does it become an entitlement within the school? In other words, the point I'm trying to get to, it's going to cost somebody something somewhere, and I don't see that in this bill, and I'm trying to figure out who's going to be paying at what point. Either Game and Fish is not going to be charging, and which Game and Fish is going to be, it's going to cost them money and they'll be coming to us, or it's going to be costing the school districts money to pay their instructors both to get instructed plus to teach the course plus not to mention classroom time and so forth, and they have to find it in their calendars and in their schedules to do this. So if the sponsors could please let me know how they foresee this working.
Senator Christensen, let's allow one more question, then you can address both. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I certainly share the same concerns as my good colleague in the back row. And I had several questions about this myself. And then also on accountability issues, you know, there is a lot of discussion. We've had a lot of talk about accountability in schools and teachers and courses and curriculums and we're adding one more thing into there, and I'm just kind of, I'm personally a little confused on how this fits in. I'm not opposed to this. Absolutely, I think hunter safety, And I had the pleasure of going through Hunter Safety, and then I attended Hunter Safety with my kids, and it was great to have that opportunity to do that. But here again, we're adding one more thing into their courts. I understand it's an elective. I understand that it's voluntary and it's not mandatory, but I just have the concerns of just one more thing. Who's accountable? Who are you going to make accountable? Where does the teachers fit in? And where do the schools fit in? Where's the liability? Are the schools liable? I mean, I'm just uncertain of this.
Senator Christensen, if you'd address both sets of questions.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Going specifically to the good commissioner from Sheridan.
Senator.
Location was right. Good, Senator. As for funding, and this was a concern, we got into it, and that's when in committee, one of the deputy directors for Fish and Game stood up and said, not only will we offer the training to the schools, which they already do and are mandated to do, but they'll offer the supplies. And so as far as the cost to the student or to the schools, out-of-pocket money, we're not seeing that. At the same time, our state superintendent of schools was there along with staff in that committee hearing. As far as the time and dollars, with the good senator from Rock Springs, that time and dollars, part of that is built into that flex time, whether it's a morning, whether it's an afternoon, or whether it's during the day as an elective. Now, there was conversation with the state school people that they were going to go sit down with their folks and talk to, but they thought there was an opportunity to work it in where they work other of these kind of safety issues in, maybe to a PE class in that grade range. And there was great support coming from that side, and it wasn't they appreciated part of the appreciation of this, I think, and part of the appeal is it's not just hunter-based, it's safety-based and firearm-based. And as we talked about and have heard talk about the exposure that kids have in Wyoming to firearms, this aspect of safety and education is critical, not just at home, but also in the schools. And there was a real benefit out there, and not just from a hunting standpoint, but from a general education and safety aspect with some of the challenges that are facing both this state and our nation.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, let me say first that I tend to, my instinct is to be supportive of this bill. I think it's trying to accomplish a worthy objective. I've got two questions, first of which goes to the necessity for the bill. And that's, the question is, to what extent is this already being done by our school districts? How many are not offering such a course so it's not available? The only personal knowledge I have is that way back when my kids went through junior high in Casper, it was offered to them. But I don't know what's going on all over the state. So that's my first question, is what are we really going to change with this bill? Are there school districts out there who are not now offering this hunter safety? The second question, Mr. Chairman, is a little different. I recall a number of years ago when the Professional Teacher Standards Board virtually killed off driver's education in our schools by insisting that it could only be done by certified teachers, and we had to legislate against them. Now, I know there's a system set up where the Game and Fish provides instructors and is involved with that. But do we need to put a precautionary amendment in this bill that says that the PTSB has got to stay out of this one just to make sure they don't do the same thing again? Is there a potential problem there? And I would ask the Senate to think. I don't know whether the sponsor would have an answer to that, but I ask the Senate to think about that question as to whether that might be an improvement we might make to this particular bill, just as a precaution, given our prior experience with that particular group. So, Mr. Chairman, those are my questions.
Senator Jennings?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those questions came up in committee. The state education couldn't really give us an answer without doing a poll to see which schools were offering it. I can tell you that the junior high that my granddaughter goes to in Casper, she just took this course there, and she was ecstatic about it. And I can tell you, next year we probably will be eating more rabbit. And then we'll work our way up into the birds, into the deer and the antelope. So, what it did is it took a young person who really didn't care about hunting, which is kind of, you know, I've kind of worried about my kids and grandkids because this is part of our heritage and my family heritage is my granddad being an outfitter and everything, that this was part of the family, but none of the kids were interested. And now my granddaughter goes and she takes his class. She knows now the safe way to do it. And all of a sudden, she's just, let's go do it. And so I don't have to go back and depend on the Hunter Mentor Program to be able to take her hunting because at that level, she didn't care. There are schools doing it. I don't think they're, from the testimony in committee, it doesn't sound like a lot because the education department couldn't even come up with a number. They'd have to go out and look. The other thing in committee that we talked about was what the senior senator from Natrona County brought up was the fact that would it have to be certified teachers? I think that the transition of this thing, in the beginning, it will be game and fish personnel or certified game and fish personnel, but I think it will transition over into certified teachers that are already employed at the school picking up the program. And I think that was kind of the hope and the desire of this. So eventually that wouldn't be an issue of whether it was a certified teacher taking the class. Because the classes can be offered during the day, in the afternoons, after school, or on the weekends, then that might be the other way that you bring those two together. I do agree with the senior center from Natrona County that maybe we ought to put that in this bill as an amendment and maybe show what that transition should be. This is a good bill, and I hope that you'd all support it.
Senator Hicks?
Mr. Chairman, if you would allow me the opportunity, I would like to address numerous questions from my distinguished colleagues dealing with the time availability within the school districts. And I did call and consult with some of our middle school teachers in Carbon County School District Number 1. We don't currently teach that in at least the satellite schools to that district, and they thought it was a good idea. But get back to where they were thinking is they could incorporate this into their curriculum because we're only talking, I believe, about 15 hours of instruction. It's not a semester-long class. So you're talking about a couple of weeks of classroom instruction. Those teachers thought they could either work that in through enrichment or PE or an extracurricular activity right after school or in the morning. At least the teachers that I consulted with didn't seem to perceive that this was going to be an onerous burden on their ability to get this instruction out there, especially given the fact that a lot of the instructors are going to be volunteer certified through the Wyoming Game and Fish Department or Game and Fish Department employees. And a lot of our schools currently invite these people in already, so this is just a continuing extension of that involvement with that agency. The other thing that came up was an accountability standpoint. One of the things you have to understand about this program, there is an accountability for the students. And ultimately, that becomes an accountability back onto the program itself. And you are tested when you get done with this. And you either pass or you fail. If you fail, you are not issued a certificate of hunter safety. If you pass, you're given a card, got one here in my wallet, that says you have passed a course in firearms instruction and hunter safety. So there is a measure of accountability to determine whether the program succeeds or fails in the school district, no different than we do with our current testing program. That's an evaluation test. Is the program working and how successful it is based on the performance of those students And I think that, to a certain degree, gets to the accountability issue.
Senator Burns.
I'm sorry, but I just don't feel my concern was addressed, properly addressed, as far as the expense this is going to be to schools. The good senator from Carbon County just mentioned that you'll have a number of volunteers. I hope so, but it says here on page 1, line 16, school districts shall provide instruction. That's a mandate. There are 48 different school districts, and there are a great number of elementary schools within each of those school districts. Now, I don't know if you're going to get a volunteer for each school district, a volunteer for each elementary school within that school district, or if you're going to be transporting the kids to a central location for this instruction. And the instruction itself may only be a few weeks, but then you've got different groups of kids coming through. So it would be a good portion of the school year that's going to be spent on this. And if you talk to any district superintendent, anytime there's a sport or any activity like that, the school employee that is put on there is, they do it because there's extra money involved. Every coach gets paid extra money to do this. So the question I've got on this bill is, how come there's no appropriation on this? We're mandating school districts to do this, and they're going to have to be paying people to do it, not to mention any additional expense for transporting the kids and so forth, things like that. I would think that there should be an appropriation attached to this unless you're asking each and every school district to swallow this cost.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The testimony in committee was that the cost of this course in materials is about $10. Game and Fish was willing to put that into the program. If we pattern it after the course that my granddaughter just completed, it was in her gym class. So it was people that was already employed, and instead of taking golf or soccer or dodgeball or whatever for that section, she took hunter safety. So in that case, the teachers are already there, and if these teachers want to put that in their gym class, then over time they can become certified, they can do it, there's nobody that has to be brought in. So I think that's the easiest way without funds. Game and Fish, they're putting in the material. The teachers that are already there teaching the gym classes, they're signed up. It also could be that Game and Fish would supply and the instructor, and the only thing the school would be supplying is the facility. So at that point, you have you may have a little extra on the janitor, but if you use it at the end of the day when it's already been used, then the janitor's going to clean it up anyway. So I understand the concern, but I don't think it's as big a dollars as it one might think it is.
Senator Perkins?
Thank you. I'm going to stand up, and this will be the one time that I speak on this bill, I promise. And I'm just going to put this out there because it's just, and then it'll be done, and then we can go on and vote. And what we have in here is in the bill, existing in the law is already the requirement the department shall institute and coordinate a statewide course of instruction, safety, and competency in handling firearms. That's already the existing law in Wyoming. And so I guess when we do these things, we talk about local control tons when we come down here. And then every time we turn around, we go out and we instruct local school districts, you will do this and you shall do this. And so we already told them they had to do it. Now we're going to tell them not only do they do that, but no later than 2011, 2012, they're going to do it in all school districts. When we look at that and we talk about limited government, I think this is how government continues to creep and take control. And we assert the authority. We come down here and I'm as guilty of it as everybody else, but we pontificate. And then next thing you know, here's another program that goes out there. If the school boards, who I believe are somewhat are elected officials just like we are the local conscience of the community, if this is vital to come and happen in that community, then by golly, the school board has already authorized, we've already statutorily instructed the department, they have to have this available. But yet now we're going to come back and we're going to say, not only will you do this, you shall do it at this within this point in time, and it'll, by golly, it'll be in elementary school or fifth grade or whatever time frame we do it in. And you know, it just seems to me we're overreaching. This is anything but limited government in my view. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll sit down.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 71, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No.
No.
Division. Division having been called, standing vote. Pardon? All those in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Senate File 71 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senate Majority Leader Ross.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, motion carried. Senate President Anderson.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
A couple of announcements. First announcement is to once again remind you that the photographers are downstairs in the basement conference room. That is in the southeast corner of the building downstairs. There are signs that tell you how to get there. I've been informed that those attending it's been a little slow, and so if you have an opportunity to get that done, that would be helpful. In addition, I've been also advised by the good president to discuss with you that when you're speaking on the floor here, please try to speak close enough or align yourself close enough with the microphone, so that we're assured that this goes out on streaming audio. With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Are there any announcements, Senator Geis?
Committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet upon adjournment tonight to take up Senate File 9, Economic Analysis, Senate File 58, Landowners' Rights and Wind Energy Development, Senate File 10, Protection of Livestock Animals. Senate File 55, Subdivision Perimeter Participation Fencing. And Senate File 64, Wild.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, just an announcement on recalibration. We will have a follow-up session from the one we had this morning, another one just like we had for those that couldn't attend this morning, on recalibration up in 302 upon adjournment, the second session that we're offering.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, Committee number 3, Revenue, will meet 15 minutes after we recess this noon in Senate Room 16 to take up the bills, Senate File 47, Concealed Weapons, and Senate File 97, Concealed Weapons Retirement Law Enforcement.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Tomorrow morning, your committee number 1, Judiciary, will take up at 7 a.m. in room B63 of the Hirschler Building. We'll finish up working SJ 2 and healthcare freedom, Senate Joint Resolution 3, healthcare freedom 2. And after that, we'll go in and begin our public hearing on SJ 5, defense of marriage constitutional amendment. And if time permits, we'll see if we can get to Senate File 17, Senate File 67, which are probation and parole amendments and guardianship wards, sealed records. Thank you, Mr. President.
Other announcements? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number two appropriations will meet around 12:30 and 2:04 to continue with the UW and the budget.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, point of personal privilege, please.
You may.
As your chairman of your tech committee, technology and process, I want to let the senators know that we're not going to get hard copies of the hotline anymore. And there are, that we are tracking that. That's on your intranet. Okay, and you can do this. You honestly can. You actually have an icon on your computer. It's got the little cowboy and it says State of Wyoming intranet. Intranet, not internet. This is inside. You can click on that. It'll ask you for your username and your password. The password is the same login that you used to get on your computer. Your username is probably something you already know, but it has to do with your first initial and your last name, I might point out. You can click on that. You can go and view the hotline just like we always used to get it when it was hard copy. And there are definitely hotline comments coming in, and you can sort those and just get them by your district or just get them on particular bills. But I want you to know that there are constituents that are making hotline recommendations to you, and this is the way you have to get them because you're not going to get paper copies. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome to the 21st century.
Other announcements? Seeing none. You've heard the motion. The Senate shall stand recessed until 2 p.m. this afternoon.